Welcome to the newest members of the Green Bay Packers, linebacker Blake Martinez and defensive end Dean Lowry. How do they fit into the Packers defense? We'll find out with Scott McKenna, the Talkin' Smack blog. It's all coming up on a special edition of Railbird Central next. Welcome to a special edition of Railbird Central. Your immediate knee-jerk reaction to the newest members of the Green Bay Packers. I'm joined today by, as usual, or I shouldn't say as usual, our frequent guest on the show, Scott McKenna, the Talkin' Smack blog. Scott, how's the draft treating you?
I'm happy, Brian. How are you doing, man?
Good. Good to hear your voice. Let's get right to it. Well, we got plenty of time here. Let's start with our reaction to the newest picks of the Green Bay Packers, the fourth round selections, Blake Martinez and Dean Lowry. We'll get to some of the other rounds, both what happened already and maybe some predictions for the future in a little bit. But Scott, they finally addressed the inside linebacker position. It took until the fourth round. Was that too late to address inside linebacker, in your opinion?
You know, it's really interesting because if Ted Thompson really wanted his linebacker or somebody at the inside linebacker spot, when he traded up yesterday into the second round, my initial reaction was that he might be doing that for Deion Jones. And that might have been his target. But clearly Ted Thompson, when he goes to bed at night, he's thinking about what the future is like of the Green Bay Packers roster, and he wants to have insurance policies in place when he gets to the negotiating table, when having discussions with unrestricted free agents. So he had next offseason in mind, and he wanted to prepare himself in case there's a disaster with regards to, you know, potentially losing Bakhtiari or getting to the negotiating table and not being able to win that conversation, so to speak. So, you know, with that said, I felt like after you got past Ragland and Darren Lee and Deion Jones, you kind of got a lot of guys that were very, very similar players in Brothers and Wright and Matakevich and Vigil and Martinez and Kwiatkowski, who went to the Bears. So, you know, I didn't have a problem with them holding off in the third round in drafting and not drafting an inside linebacker at that spot. Will say I was surprised that they did not go after Deion Jones in the trade up, though.
Yeah, I guess my reaction is I really would have loved them to have gotten Josh Perry in round three, the end of round three. I really liked his play, obviously. The Packers don't value his skill set as much as I do, but I thought he was a starting caliber linebacker, whereas Kyler Fackrell is a little bit overaged, I thought. He's going to be 25 by the time the season starts. It's not as if I don't like Kyler Fackrell, but I really like what Joshua Perry offered. That being said, I agree with you in that I don't think there's a whole lot separating, you're right, after Ragland, after Lee. I mean, you could certainly make the argument about Miles Jack and Jalen Smith, depending on their injuries. But after those guys, there's probably not a whole lot separating Blake Martinez from Kentrell Brothers, from Antonio Morrison, from Matakevich, to any of the inside linebackers, really.
Fully agreed, man. Fully agreed. And one thing that you said, actually, to me offline that kind of stuck with me when you accurately predicted Kenny Clark in round one before the draft. And you said something where you thought Perry would really fit. If you drafted somebody in the first round to keep the lineman off Perry, and if you let Perry have a vision to the football, he would have really fit into the Packers. And I absolutely agree with that. I'm not 100% certain that Perry you know, fits what is a true need for the Packers, and that's, you know, the ability to play the pass. And, you know, I will say this, that, you know, one space that when I watched Blake Martinez and where I studied him most was in the Senior Bowl. And I thought he played a really nice game at the in the Pac-12 championship. I was really impressed with him. But then when I watched him in the Senior Bowl, and frankly, I watched the game again last night to keep my eyes on Spriggs and Fackrell one for another time. And it was interesting because I commented with a buddy that I was watching the game with that, boy, in the run game, Martinez was really getting beat up a lot. So it was interesting where I initially had studied Martinez on a handful of times and just, you know, really have enjoyed the heart that he plays football with. He seems like he's an emotional leader in the huddle without a doubt. He has a great first step. I see him as having a better quickness than speed. And at times it felt like, you know, maybe for my eye, he may have struggled in pass coverage. As it's turning out from everything you're reading after the selection, I might be inaccurate in that assessment from a statistical perspective. But I will say that as I watched him last night, I was surprised that his inability to take on blockers in the Senior Bowl, when I rewatched the game last night, that was one thing that was commented on a number of occasions, and that was prior to the Packers selecting him. So for what that's worth, I feel like it's worth passing along, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I saw the tweet there where Pro Football Focused had him graded as the highest, you know, linebacker in coverage for this past season or something like that, or in the draft class. That really surprised me because he's a guy that doesn't have a ton of speed. But what Blake Martinez does have is fantastic diagnosing skills. Like, he just knows the game in and out, and you can tell he probably, you know, that Stanford mind there. He probably really studies hard, understands, you know, the you know, watches film to know what routes they're going to run and is in the right place at the right time. I think he's good in a short area. I think he'll be exposed if he's got to keep up with a tight end down the seam. I think he'll be exposed if he has to follow a slot receiver on a long crosser across the field. The same kind of place as Jake Ryan is exposed. But I mean, unless you go and get a, you know, Deion Jones from LSU, there's not many linebackers that can do that.
So true. You know, across the board, and I think you might have wrote something like this or tweeted something like this out right before we picked up the phone, but it's interesting. You and I oftentimes can see the football world through similar lenses. But one of the pieces that really has struck me with Ted Thompson's selections is they all seem to be emotional leaders. They seem to fit the Green Bay way, if you will. Good guys, very active on the field, go about their game the right way, seem like they're all going to fit into the locker room, and it just seems like there's a personality that he's trying to add. And additionally, across the board, it looks like every single player that they've drafted has a quick first couple of steps. And I think that, you know, from Clark to Lowry all the way through, regardless of position, their quickness in being able to get to their spot has been one of the that I think really applies to each of the selections.
Yeah, you mentioned about the high character, I think, is really like a common theme this draft, more so than usual. Yeah, you hear like, oh, Packer people, and you think that. But I wonder if this is a reaction to a little bit about these drug allegations, the PED allegations that, you know, what's his name, Mike Neal was tied to, and Julius Peppers and Clay Matthews. And I realize, like, you may or may not buy into it. And part of it is simply that the drugs they were alleged to have used are also not prohibited by the NFL's, you know, substance abuse policy, like being like one step ahead of the game. Like, even if they would, you know, even if they, you know, took these drugs, they're not banned. So I wonder if they're really trying to get high character guys who are not going to take PEDs or things like that. I don't know. It's something that went through my mind.
The other thing in conjunction with that, and not to encourage enhanced PEDs. You look at Fackrell and Spriggs from yesterday, and well, Spriggs can, he showed up on the bench press. When I watch him play, I see a guy who is quick as a cat. He gets in and out of his breaks. It's like he took classes from Bob Knight playing defense, moving side to side. When you watch him as a blocker, or you know, when he's blocking and then he's off the snap. But one thing that concerns me is maybe he needs to get stronger up top from and being able to block the bull rush. And you know, in the Senior Bowl and in the practices leading up to the Senior Bowl, I think you saw Sheldon Day really be able to move him a bit. And that was one thing that I will say is a concern for me. And maybe if he's coached up, because clearly when he's on the bench, right, I forget what his overall bench number was, but I think he moved the weight pretty well and was among the strongest of the offensive tackles on the bench, if I'm correct there. But with that said, in the bull rush, it did appear that he needed to get stronger. Fackrell, the same thing. Fackrell seems to really have the quickness off the ball. He's a fighter. He's quick. He's got good speed, and especially in short distances. But he needs to get stronger, and so that's going to be an interesting thing to watch as to, you know, what the strength and conditioning program is going to be like for these guys, and you know, maybe with the way they're eating and the way they're acting. You know, between now and the start of camp here in late July. So going to be really interesting to see what how these guys, you know, do fit into the defense and how they're utilized.
Yeah, I know they're different types of bodies or whatever, but I kind of looked at the first two selections, Kenny Clark and Jason Spriggs, in that they're both really young, and I think they're both, you know, still growing into their bodies a little bit. So I think there's potential there for a guy, especially Spriggs, to get a lot stronger. You know, once he spends a year in an NFL weight room, that may not be a big deal, because ideally, once again, I mean, Jason Spriggs will not play a down for you in 2015. I mean, I realize sometimes it's pretty hard for an entire offensive line to go through an entire season without an injury, and will probably play at some point. But I mean, as long as David Bakhtiari and Brian Bulaga are healthy, they're going to be the tackles. And then it's, you know, 2017, pardon me, when Spriggs really could be a starter in this Packers offense.
You know, Brian, what's really interesting to me, and I personally think that TJ Lang is just a superstar, and I really, really, really am pulling for TJ Lang to be a Green Bay Packer for the duration of his career, and I hope that he becomes a priority, and I also hope that he can give us a hometown discount to stick around, because I love having him in green and gold, and I just love his attitude and his personality. He seems like a really fun guy. And when you watch TJ Lang play for the Packers in his first preseason game, and they were trying to, you know, see if was he a tackle, was he a guard, what he was, and they tried to move him out of tackle, and he's turned into a Pro Bowl guard. And with that said, when you watched him move side to side at tackle, you knew right away TJ Lang had a future in the NFL. And, you know, and he gutted it out for us early on. I remember he stepping up and playing a role in the NFC Championship game, blocking Julius Peppers as a rookie. But with that said, when I watched Spriggs and the way that he moves side to side, it kind of reminded me a little bit of a young TJ Lang, I have to say. And, you know, now, does he have the upper body strength right now to play guard? I don't think so. He'd be a real big guard. But when you see what Kyle Long has done in Chicago, transitioning from a tackle to an enormous guard, well, these days he's maybe the best guard in the NFL, I think it could be argued. So it's going to be interesting to see what Spriggs really does offer. He looks like he's a left tackle, looks like he could play right tackle. Not sure that he looks like you today as a guard, but as he puts strength on, I'm wondering if that's an option, you know, as well down the line. And it's just one of those things that I guess sort of spins through the mind out of curiosity. When you look at the history of the type of players that Ted Thompson has drafted, generally there has been versatility as to whether they can slide between guard and tackle, or center and guard, or in Treader's case, center guard or tackle.
Let's try to do this. Let's look in the crystal ball a year from now, and we know that four offensive linemen have contracts who are expiring, and TJ Lang, Josh Sitton, your starting guards, David Bakhtiari, your starting left tackle, and then J.C. Treader, prior to Spriggs, at least, your number six offensive lineman off the bench. I mean, who do you think the Packers prioritize there? Who's coming back? Who's not? Because I don't think you can sign all four of them. Maybe you can sign three. I'm not sure about all four. And I know sometimes we got a whole season in front of us, and sometimes an injury can make a decision for you if all of a sudden one of these guys suffers a bad injury. But I mean, what's your reaction to that?
You know, I think that the priority would be Bakhtiari, just because it's left tackle is such a crucial position. You know, cost is going to obviously have to be taken significantly into consideration there. But if the price is right, I would think, assuming Bakhtiari continues to trend the way he is, and he's been very durable, he's played through pain throughout his career. I know he missed a little time last year, but he's just a gutter. And, you know, I really love the way that he guts games out and plays out and seems to really relish the thought of being able to protect Rodgers' backside. So I think all things considered, even though Spriggs is the insurance policy, I do think that Bakhtiari is number one. And I really think that Lang, he just fits the persona of what Green Bay is all about. He's a classic Midwestern guy. Truly love having him in Green Bay. And I think when you got to a negotiating table, he might be more friendly than what Sitton may do. I could be wrong, but it just seems to me like Sitton could be. And I love having Josh Sitton as a Packer. He's I think this goes without saying, he is absolutely spectacular. And a true gamer, a turn back the clock type guy. We saw Jerry Kramer on TV. It seems like Sitton could play with Kramer. With that said, you know, I could see Sitton looking to maximize his earning potential and potentially ending up in a place like, you know, Jacksonville or Tampa or Miami and returning to his roots in Florida as a place where he's at next year. And just my gut talking, I don't obviously know anything. That's just the way I see it. And then additionally, I would think that Treader would be there. But I will say, if you can get a guy like Treader to come back at a deal similar that you got Lane Taylor for, you know, where it's going to be a fairly cap-friendly deal, and you know he can be a versatile lineman that can play maybe all five positions on the line, well, if he's going to be able to come in and you're going to be able to get him for, you know, a 2 to 3 year deal at a couple million dollars a year, that might make a lot of sense. So, you know, that, I guess, is the way that I see the priorities. And, you know, it will ultimately be very, very difficult to justify spending the amount of money that it will require to get both Lang and Sitton at guard and to be able to fit it underneath the salary cap.
I'm right there with you. I think both those guys will be tough to re-sign, the two guards. Let's assume one, I mean, without even saying which one at this point, let's just say one of them leaves as a free agent or whatever, either Lang or Sitton. With Jason Spriggs being the athletic specimen that, you know, obviously the Packers were drawn to how athletic he is. He's fast for an offensive lineman. He's a former tight end. I mean, can you possibly see Jason Spriggs being the left tackle of the future and Bakhtiari kicking inside?
I would be shocked at that. I don't know that I see Bakhtiari sliding to the inside or being able to slide to the inside. And plus, you know, I don't see Bakhtiari as a powerful run blocker that would be required from the inside. I see him as a real solid pass blocker, potentially needing, you know, an area of improvement for him would be as a driving run blocker. So with that said, I would be shocked if Bakhtiari could slide inside. Do you see that as an option?
It's gone through my mind, at least. I don't know. And you know, we're talking about all these offensive linemen. I guess I should mention too, the guy we're not like mentioning at all because he's got a long-term contract is Brian Bulaga, but he's also the most injury prone of all the offensive linemen who's missed, you know, seasons and game stretches at a time. I mean, who knows? I mean, one more injury could end his career.
That's true as well. Very, very true. And again, this is where I was saying that Ted Thompson, he goes to bed at night thinking about the future of this roster, and that's what keeps him up, and ensuring that he has insurance policies at each position. And I think that's ultimately what was the overriding and overwhelmingly drawing factor to selecting Spriggs in the second round and trading three picks to be able to get up to get him.
Okay, let's talk about Kyler Fackrell. I mean, you already addressed him a little bit, but I mean, what do you see his role in 2016? Because the Packers, I mean, they do what kind of a situation similar to the offensive line in that all these guys are under contract this year, like Julius Peppers and Nick Perry and Jerron Elliott. Clay Matthews is obviously locked up for a while, but he's the only one. All the rest of these guys got 1 year left on the contract. Is Kyler Fackrell biding his time this year?
I think you're going to see him play. And Brian, you know, I'm a football nerd, and I'm the type of guy that during the college season, I tape college games, and I DVR them, and I watch them late into the night with one purpose. I try to scout who I think the Pat would fit in Green Bay. And I've got these little notes that I keep on my iPad and my iPhone, and I just jot down, you know, one or two sentences right next to their name and what round I see them as a potential target in. And at the end of the year, I compile it all together and I put it together and I post a blog, and it's generally just a bunch of short notes on players that I wrote throughout the year. What's funny about Kyler Fackrell, three times I watched him play, three times I wrote his name down. I wrote the same thing down about him, and I never remembered him from the time before. And it's really interesting. With him, you're gonna get a guy that consistently wrote this down. Ted Thompson will call him a quote unquote football player. And it's interesting. He does everything for you, and not everything that's gonna absolutely wow you. It's not going to win you over when you first watch him. He may not stick in your mind, but he's the type of guy that almost like, remember Frank Zombo's first year in Green Bay where, you know, you just did so much to keep you appetized. Like, oh man, if he can just take the next step, like he and Clay Matthews could be a thing for the future. And then he just never took it. I kind of feel like, I wonder if Fackrell is going to be kind of in that same mold where, you know, he's got everything that you like. He's got length. He's got quickness around the corner. One thing that really attracts me to his game is that when he's rushing the passer, if he's not going to get there, he gets his arms in the air. He disrupts the passer. And at 6'5" and long arms, you know, he can block the vision of the quarterback, and he can be disruptive without, you know, necessarily getting home, if you will. And because he comes on the speed rush and comes around the edge, what he does do is he forces the quarterback to step up, which hopefully will be right into the arms of Kenny Clark. And you know, when I see him, he not only has that move around the edge, but he's also got this dip move to the inside where he fakes to the outside and then has a real quick step to the inside, and he almost gives like a little inside swim move to split between the tackle and the guard. And because he has a quick, you know, 3 to 5 step burst, he's able to get right into the quarterback and with it, right into the quarterback's vision. And with his length, he's disruptive. He's active, and you know, so will he be able to grow as a player? I think that's going to be interesting. I think he's going to bring a dimension that, you know, you and I have talked in prior to the draft about the type of guy that fits the 3-4 outside linebacker and how we were concerned about the Nick Perry's and the Mike Neal's maybe playing out of position at that spot. Fackrell can drop. He can get into space. He can play in coverage. I think he can get sideline to sideline a bit. And, you know, is he going to turn and run with a tight end? Probably not, but he's going to be able to drop into zone coverage and maybe make a play or two for you. So I do see him getting playing time this year, and I do see him, if he can continue to develop, I do see him, you know, potentially able to grow. One last point on it, Brett, that I don't know if you saw what Phil Steele wrote, but I mean, how can you not respect what he writes? I mean, he's just, he's maybe, for people who publish draft thoughts and scouting thoughts, is he the best? Probably. And, when he talked about his steals of the third round or the picks he liked most in the third round, he had Fockrell as his second most favorite pick or valued pick of the third round. So if he's saying that, that carries a lot of weight in my eyes.
Here's my concern with Kyler Fackrell. If you look at his production in college, he's known as this pass rusher, but he's like seasons have been like he had a season with 4 sacks, he had a season with 5 sacks. And he's got all these hurries. He gets these hurries all the time and you know, these things that Pro Football Focus likes to chart, you know, pressures and hurries. And he'll, you know, I worry that, you know, okay, he played at Utah State. If he's, you know, the king of almost getting there, you know, it's going to be that much tougher for him to do that in the pros. And the, you know, the production is still going to be subpar, I guess. How do you react to that?
Yeah, that's spot on, dude. Dude, that is spot on. And the other thing is, you know, you go to draftbreakdown.com and watch his film from the Colorado State game. And what you just described is exactly it, right? He gets around the corner oftentimes on a blitz where, you know, maybe Colorado State wasn't, and they weren't very good last year. They had a real, they lost their coach and lost a couple of really good players the year before and just didn't have as good of a season last year. And living in Colorado, I try to keep my eyes on them a bit. But they just weren't prepared for his blitz. And he got to the quarterback, but he didn't finish the play often. Now, he was disruptive, and he broke down plays, which oftentimes can be just as valuable as a sack, right? But, you know, your assessment there, I think, is very accurate, and it's keenly stated, as you oftentimes do. But, you know, I say this. You know, sometimes the statistics can be overrated, and a pressure or a hurry can be just as impactful as a sack. And I think that, you know, one game that instantly jumps out at me is the Arizona Cardinal-Green Bay Packer game the first time we played where, you know, before they were necessarily sacking Rodgers, they were getting in his face and getting him jittery. And if you can make that sort of impact at the line of scrimmage with height and with length, I think that can continue to lead to nervous feet, which will ultimately provide turnover prone decisions by quarterbacks.
Okay, coming full circle here, and sorry if this is kind of a little bit scatterbrained show here, just kind of giving our off the cuff reactions. But coming back now to Blake Martinez. Where does he stack up in terms of talent compared to what the Packers already have at the position and Jake Ryan and Sam Barrington? Can he push those guys for playing time on the inside?
I certainly think he can push them for playing time. You know, he's a little bit similar, I think, to Jake Ryan, where he tries to take on blockers. He's going to give you all kinds of effort, all kinds of hustle. Going to be a team-oriented, team-first guy, not going to be overly fleet of foot. If you spread him out wide and you try to cover a running back in the flat, look out, I don't feel great about it. But he's sort of in that same mold where, you know, he's going to challenge for playing time. I think he gives good depth there. And, you know, he's not only is he going to push those guys, but he may be pushing Carl Bradford for a spot, right? Like, that's, we have to remember Bradford might be in the mix as well. So, you know, with that said, I do see him as a guy that's going to compete for a spot. Do I see him necessarily competing for starting time? Maybe not. And if he can really be the guy that is being suggested now on really on Twitter that I didn't necessarily see him as, maybe he can be a guy that competes with Joe Thomas for snaps on third downs. And really giving heart and emotional intelligence and instincts to the pass defense. I didn't see him as that guy in my first look. I'm going to give another thorough look at him most likely tomorrow night when I rewatch the Pac-12 game that I've got, a championship game. I got that one on DVR still, and I'll dive into that tomorrow night and hope to have a more thorough take on him in the near future.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what Blake Martinez brings. Very productive linebacker. Had 140 tackles this past year. I mean, that's an incredible amount, and one of those guys who just has a nose for the ball that I like. But we haven't said a whole lot about Dean Lowry so far, and I want to ask you this, Scott, because we kind of alluded to it earlier. I'm kind of seeing it. Dean Lowry is a run-stuffing, five-technique defensive end. And I kind of see something with the Packers here. You know, you kind of we all worry about the inside linebackers because they're maybe not the best athletes. But I see the approach the Packers taking here. Okay, let's take Kenny Clark. Let's take Dean Lowry. And let's just keep the linebackers clean because these guys are brutes up front and they're going to be able to do that.
The Packers needed to draft at least 2 to 3 defensive linemen in this draft, and they've got 2. And it's interesting because Lowry also, I always turn back to, and to echo what you said, I'm kind of scatterbrained right now off the cuff, haven't given a ton of thought of this. But one thing that I always think back to, you know, heading into draft weekend is Ted Thompson going to get the guy that he wanted? Well, clearly he had anybody that he could have imagined, and round one was there. He took Clark. He got his guy. Clearly he wanted Spriggs. That was his guy. Traded up to get him. And now you get a guy like Lowry. And when I see a guy like Lowry, I always think back to the time when it was long discussed that the Packers wanted Muhammad Wilkerson. And the Jets shockingly took him right before the Packers, right? It almost felt like Thompson was backed into a corner and ended up taking the kid from Mississippi State, the offensive lineman, Derek Sherrod.
Sherrod.
And it's interesting because you look at Lowry, and outside of his arm length, he's kind of got the same build, right? 6'5", 6'6", just shy of 300 pounds, plays with a stout force, shows enough burst to be able to get to the quarterback. Admittedly, I did not have my eye on him as becoming a potential Packer and did not even list him as a candidate in my thorough blog that I write and prior to the draft. So that one caught me off guard. I did not see this as a fit. Have to say that I love the length, love his height, love his ability to get his hands up. Love another thing that is a worthwhile point. Packers are taking guys that are intelligent. They're smart players, generally perceived to have high IQs. And with that said, Lowry seems to really fit that mold, the Midwestern kind of guy, going to be able to be a mutter that can add some physicality, you know, to the team in October and November as the seasons change in Titletown, USA. And hopefully one of the things that's most going to be found is that through him, you're going to be able to get him snaps and to add rotation or add him to the rotation, which is going to free up the legs and to add to, you know, maybe add some youthful exuberance to the legs of an aging Julius Peppers, right? So as the Packers really try to, you know, are they going to go with a 2-4 or a 3-4 or what is their alignment going to really be? Because oftentimes they do only play with 2 down linemen. So will be interesting to see whether they're using, you know, Lowry as it does. Are his arms long enough for a 5 technique? That is going to be a big thing to see if it matters. I know a lot of NFL players are vocal that arm length is one of the most overrated things out there, and Lowry will be one of the studies, I guess, to be able to scientifically take a look at.
One of the things I like about Lowry is, you know, Northwestern is, you know, typically not known as like this powerhouse football program. And yet under Pat Fitzgerald, they're like a 10-win team almost every year. And yeah, you can argue that the Big Ten is maybe watered down a little bit, but still Northwestern is like a 10-win team. Dean Lowry is the reason, or one of the biggest reasons, that this team has been good for the past 4 years, because he's out there kicking butt along with some other good players there. But he was definitely a big, big part of that the past few seasons, as they've had a good, especially the last 2 years, Northwestern's had a good defense. Scott, a hypothetical here. I mean, we were both pretty big on Andrew Billings. before the draft, even thinking the Packers would take him the first round. I don't think we were alone by any means, because there was a lot of people, you know, surprised how far he fell. Why is this? Why did he fall to the fourth round, day three?
I have no explanation for it. When they traded up in the second round, my first thought was Deion Jones. My second thought was Billings, and my third thought was Reed. I was positive that that was one of the three players that were going to draft. And when they went with Spriggs, I was shocked, right? But the reality is I have no idea. And when we got to the third round, I was like, Billings has to be a no-brainer. You know, he has to be a no-brainer of a selection. And I don't know. I really do not have an answer for that, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's hindsight, but I mean, what do you think of Miles Jack, round one, Jason Spriggs, just stick with round two, and then you get Billings in round three. You fill all the positions of a need.
It's unbelievably true. It really is unbelievably true. And, you know, one of the things that's going to be really interesting to follow is, you know, what happens with Miles Jack's career. And, you know, this is a guy that, and I made this comment when I was talking to people yesterday about the draft. When you look at the Green Bay Packers, and as long as they have a healthy Aaron Rodgers, the ability for the Green Bay Packers to be able to potentially draft somebody who is as talented as Miles Jack or Jalen Smith will, like, never happen again, we hope, right? Like, it's those guys are perennial top five players, right? And, you know, question marks, and, you know, Miles Jack's situation is like, huh, I mean, he's dunking a basketball. He looks uber fit in the gym. Dr. Andrews is saying he doesn't need another surgery. What's the holdup, right? And that's not to say that I don't like Kenny Clark, because you and I, you were bigger on him than me, but I really am excited about the pick, and I think he's going to be a great Green Bay Packer. With that said, you know, to get a guy like Miles Jack who just absolutely fits what is maybe the most important need, if you will, on the roster, boy, it's if he's able to start week one when the Packers head down to Jacksonville, I might add, that will be a tough pill to really swallow for me. If you see him out there making all kinds of plays in week one, that will hurt, I admit.
Okay, here. Let's take a little bit of guessing what the Packers are going to do. They have two more picks, one each in the fifth and sixth round. They traded away their seventh. So, I mean, what do you see as the positions of need? I don't know if you got names, you got positions, but what do you think about these last two selections? I admit I haven't been following it since we went on air. I haven't been following who's been taken, but maybe while you're talking, I can find out if they're still there.
I think running back is the number one position of need at this point. If Paul Perkins is still around, I too have not seen one pick since the Packers selected.
He's gone.
Outside. He's gone.
There's been a run of running backs I see taken here. Perkins is gone. DeAndre Washington gone. Wendell Smallwood, some others. Yeah.
Is Josh Ferguson around? Is he around?
I believe Ferguson is still on the board, and I do like that pick. So.
Yeah. Ferguson is a guy that I would be interested in. If he is not going, if Ferguson is going to be a selected prior to the Packers, I wouldn't mind if then the Packers held off until, say, you know, the sixth round or maybe even undrafted free agency. Two guys that I really like are Brandon Wilds from South Carolina, and I really love Jarrell Presley from New Mexico. Really, really elusive back. He runs with purpose. He's been very, very, very good. When the ball's in his hands, he finds the yard marker. So he's somebody that I would really like at running back. I do think the Packers at some point need to add a running back. They're probably feeling okay with for this year with Lacy and Starks and potentially Crockett as well. But would love to add depth there from an insurance perspective. And Josh Ferguson would be my number one available name on the board that I'm aware of at this stage. If Jatavis Brown is around at inside linebacker, that to me is interesting. I do think the Packers should add at some point a cornerback or a safety. Names that I'm high on right now are, I really like Jalen Mills. When he was on the board when I last looked. Jeremy Cash was on the board that I last looked. I think I might have mentioned Jatavis Brown earlier, but he's a guy that, we've talked about him after the NFLPA Bowl that really just attracted my eye. If DJ Reader is still around, I think he's a really, really, really good run stopper. And then, Brian, just how could you not like a Jarrell Adams at tight end? I don't know if he's still there, but for a developmental guy to sit underneath Jared Cook for a year, if they're thinking there's any question mark as to whether Backman can develop or not, well, if Backman's not going to develop, you have to consider Jarrell Adams if he's around. But then, Brian, really when I look at this, there are three names that I am absolutely jonesing to become Green Bay Packers. And, the Packers have done a really good job drafting all kinds of high-character guys, safe picks, people that aren't going to get themselves in trouble, and they've protected their investments. When you're in a draft-and-develop era of really building your core of the team through the draft, you have to make sure you don't miss. And I think the Packers have drafted, in the first four rounds, they've drafted five guys that they feel comfortable having on their team for the next 3 to 4 years and see a spot for them. And I think we've touched on that already. With that said, there's a lot of guys that I think if every box would have been checked, they're first-round talent. And I see, a guy that I absolutely love is Alex McAllister from Florida. I saw him during season. I had him as potentially the number one pass rusher entering the draft. Got kicked off of Florida's team. A lot of it has been hush-hush and don't really know what the reasoning was for it. But when you talk about speed off the edge, Alex McAllister, for my eye, is as good as anybody entering this draft. You had to love Kurt Maggett when he's played. Now, he's essentially lost two of the last 3 years. But when you talk about true 3-4 outside linebackers, Kurt Maggett from Tennessee was just he fits the Green Bay way, so to speak. He, too, is just a highly productive player who makes plays behind the line of scrimmage, both in the run game and as a pass rusher. And he is somebody that would be worth a maybe not a sixth-round pick, but definitely an undrafted guy to scoop up. And then one last name, Brian, that I've wrote you about offline, but I lived in Miami for over 8 years. I talk about that often. I fell in love with Canes football, going to games at the Orange Bowl. And with that said, one guy that never really got his crack for whatever reason, he was playing behind Raphael Kirby, who was the team captain for the U. But a guy by the name of Tyreek McCord, the Canes oftentimes have these guys that just don't, for whatever reason, they just don't get the attention they deserved at the college level. And you can look at names like Jimmy Graham and Sammy Swaggart to be two names that really jump out at you as fitting that mold. And for me, the next guy in line for that is Tyreek McCord, uber athlete, just a supremely athletic guy. He brings great effort and great intensity to the field, but for whatever reason, he just didn't see the field as much, or he didn't see the snaps as much as he'd think. And I just see if he's the type of guy that if he is drafted or signs with the Packers as an undrafted guy, and I think he's got the talent to potentially be a fourth or fifth round player. Something was just didn't click with him at Miami. And if you could get him in camp, I really think he could be a difference maker, and he could be the type of player that has an NFL career.
I'll just throw a few names out here in a lot of the same positions you talked about. There's a running back I like called Daniel Lasco out of Cal. Of course, another Cal guy that the Packers seem to be collecting them, or at least maybe it just seems like that because the face of the franchise is from there. But Daniel Lasco, he's got 4.4 speed. And what's really, really interesting about him is he would play on their coverage units. And he had like 3 forced fumbles as a running back on coverage units at Cal. I think he's, as a mid-round draft choice, that's what you want, is you want guys who can also contribute on special teams. So he's kind of interesting there. Tight end, I think there's lots of interesting ones. In addition to Jarrell Adams, who I think is kind of almost this this clone of the guy the Packers signed out of South Carolina there. I mean, he can be a downfield threat, but a couple other names. I like Bo Sandlin of Montana State. He played. He had a cup of coffee at the U there. And I also like Ben Bronacker. I know ESPN did the big, kind of special on him comparing him to Rob Gronkowski. I don't know how accurate that is, but I like him as well. And then I like David Morgan of Texas San Antonio in that he's the best blocking tight end in the NFL draft, and maybe that's not huge, but I mean, if you were to get, the best blocking tight end in the sixth round, I mean, I could live with that. I could get on board with the sixth round pick just contributing to the team in that capacity and not a bad receiver. Let's see here. I really like the linebacker safety hybrids as well. I'm really surprised Jeremy Cash is still on the board from what I see here. He could be that kind of guy who is your third down type of inside linebacker. That's more of your coverage guy. Ja'Tavis Brown from Akron, some of the guys you mentioned here. I like them. So there's just a few names I like as well.
Great stuff, Brian. This is it's an exciting day for the Packers, and I really think, you look at this team. Ted Thompson went into this draft with 62 players on his roster, room to add 28. In past years, Ted Thompson would have traded back, especially when you saw the 26th and 28th pick in the first round were traded back. Ted Thompson didn't accumulate picks. Instead of he came into the draft with 9, and it looks like he's going to pick, what, 7 players. Very unlike Ted Thompson, with the exception of maybe 2012, to be able to make a decision like he did this year. But what's clear to me is Ted Thompson likes his top 53, and you can look through the roster and you can say, going into the top or into the 65 guys that he has in his roster, you can make legitimate arguments for 55 to 58 of those guys to be on the roster this year. So there's going to be some good competition. And he's still going to be able to work some magic on the phones to end today, which I think is going to be a really important day for the Packers in rounding out their roster with undrafted free agents. We'll be very curious to see what positions he really targets. Would be surprised if he doesn't go after additional defensive line help via undrafted free agency. And I would like to think that he's going to invest some time at cornerback and potentially wide receiver as well. So it'll be a fun day, even outside of the draft, to just keep your eye on who the Packers are signing at undrafted free agency. And I like how those names start to get spit out at you here shortly after the draft.
Yeah, absolutely. Scott, it was fun going through this. I can't wait to talk to you again, and maybe we'll be talking about some of these undrafted free agents the Packers sign.
Always a treat, Brian. Thanks for having me on. Go Pack Go, brother man.
Go Pack Go. Thanks, Scott. Take care.
You got it.
Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog. Google it. Follow him on Twitter, BuzzBoy3. Here at Railbird Central on a Saturday, a special draft edition of the show. And that'll do it for me as well. We'll be back again on Monday. Got Cheesehead TV founder Aaron Nagler joining me. We're going to recap the whole entire draft. Talk more about the new chess pieces the Packers got. So look forward to it then. And enjoy the rest of the draft, folks. I'll reset the Cheesehead TV homepage so you can check out the articles. And we'll see you later. Enjoy it. Enjoy the who the Packers add next year. On behalf of Scott and everybody here at Cheesehead TV, we'll see you later, folks. Let's see. I'll leave you today with a song called Mauna Boa by the String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records.